gather around. I'm glad everybody came out tonight.
Won't let that money define me. Let my struggles refine me. Know my angels behind me. Young rich man, it's the next one.
Daily races going nowhere, going nowhere.
Yeah.
Bitch, quarterback,
about a week ago,
Wow! What a way to start a football game. Utter goosebumps.
It's time for week 9, and the teams are coming together and starting to take shape in the race for the playoffs, only 5 weeks away. Our top team, A Rivers Runs Through It, still holds his one-game lead as Scott shocked the world and beat Luke, recovering from a pretty wicked hangover that only Derek Carr throwing to Seth Roberts for a walk-off touchdown could heal. It's a tight race for the number 6 spot in the playoffs as Saved by Lev Bell holds that 6 spot by me by 50 points scored, and Hokeback Mountain got a key win going 5-3 along with Bend It Like Beckham and Marcus and Recreation. We begin this week with Daenerys Targaryen, last on the pod a couple weeks ago, hoping to that being back on the pod would help salvage a 2-game losing streak. Unfortunately, it grew to 5, but the streak has been broken with a win. Welcome back now, Tim Daenerys Targaryen, to the pod as a guest caller and not in studio for the first time. How's it feel to get a win again, Tim?
You know, it feels so good. I was on a 5-game losing streak, and if it had been 6, I think I would have been just absolutely crushed, especially to Brandon, who has been one of the worst teams all year, along with myself. But to not only win, but to score the most points I've scored all season without my top 2 players definitely made me feel like I still got a shot.
All right. Well, all right. Yeah, I guess you're sitting down there 3-5 now, a lot better than being stuck in the 2-6 range with a couple other people. So,
yeah,
right. Getting that win, ending the losing streak, it feels great. Let's start this week off with my own matchup. I'm the $6 million McManus against Full Hauschka. I said that I wasn't feeling too great having to play Fronik. He had the better matchups, and even with my subbed in Seabar Smiths and 50 yarders, the trade for J-Stu helped out a little bit with his 2 scores, but it wasn't enough to overcome 2 Devontae Freeman touchdowns. Gillespie playing well with McCoy out, and Julio kind of put up a dud, and Zacherts has been forgotten. It's just awesome. Scott pulled off a huge upset, leaving massive Carr and Kelsey points on his bench, and it was a good thing things weren't close on Monday, seeing as the Vikings defense put up -2 for the first points all season, and they haven't even scored less than 7 in the last 3 weeks. This week, Full Hauschka rolls into town with the 2 tight end train, missing out on 2 of his key workhorses. Lamar Miller is on a bye as well, dropping some big waiver wire dough. $10 on Dan Bailey. Attaboy. Fedora Dix and $10 on Dan Bailey have been the only 2 purchases Scott has made. That's just awesome. Since he's got Gostkowski and the rest of the Pats are all on a bye. A big thing this week are teams that are byes. I'm missing my Cardinals defense being hurt. They're hurt up, banged up on a bye, going with the Cowboys against the Browns. Looking like some pretty decent matchups for my wide receivers on paper, but we know how those go in the end. How did things look for you right now, Tim?
Well, first of all, that is crazy that he spent $10 on a kicker. I can't imagine spending $1 on a kicker or a defense for that matter. Maybe a defense if I was really hurting and there was a big one on the board, but, I mean, come on. What are you doing? Anyway, moving on. So I'll start with Scott. I've kind of, in my words, come back down to earth. He started off, 6-0?
Started 5-0.
And that's when he lost the 2, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's 5-0. And it wasn't even close. In his first 3 weeks, he scored, I think, 160-something, 140, and 130. And so I wrote down, he nearly lost 3 straight games. He, for a long time on Sunday, Luke had the lead over him, and I'm pretty sure his projection was ahead of him. And it looked like Scott kind of came out of nowhere and finally got him at the end of the. I know he won by probably about 18 points or so, but I seem to remember it was a late night deal. Well, anyway, I wrote that Scott, he's kind of trending down. His first 6 weeks, he averaged 135 points. In his last two, he's averaged 87. That's a big difference. That's almost 50 points difference. I don't really like his chances this week. I'm not really sure. I know for a fact that Murray hasn't been fully practicing. I know Derrick Henry had a really big week last week. I think it was like his best week in the NFL so far. I feel like he might get some time, especially if Murray gets a touchdown early in the game. I could see him maybe not playing as much in the second half. And who knows? I mean, it's a toe, so it's going to affect his running. And if he feels like it's hurting and if they feel comfortable with Henry taking over the rest of the game, I could see Murray possibly having a dead game. Duke Johnson, in my opinion, is a crapshoot player. He's had major ups and major downs and more downs than ups. I mean, I don't really want anybody in Cleveland's offense on my team. Maybe Terrell Pryor, but
that's it. That's where you stop.
That's absolutely it. Allen Robinson, I know he's an incredible, incredible player, but I was reading up on him a little bit because I really haven't followed him as a player very much this year. And he's essentially been a boom or bust player this year. He's still getting a lot of targets, which is always good. But this week on the road at Kansas City, and Bortles has not been great. I know he got major fantasy points with some like last-minute scores against the Titans a few Thursdays ago. But other than that, he's really been shoddy. So I don't know. Those are players he's going to really need production from. Kenny Britt has only scored a touchdown in one game this year. Carolina is kind of on the rise a little bit. I like Olsen and I like Kelsey in there, especially with Kansas City's running back troubles. And Minnesota defense, I mean, they've been really strong, but Detroit puts up a lot of points. So I don't have a whole lot of confidence in the bulk of Scott's team. I'm not saying these are bad players by any means, but in my opinion, there's some definite question marks. Our team is pretty darn solid, and I would even possibly say the most solid going forward this year. I've said it in the original podcast.
Oh, I'd pump the brakes on that. There's no way.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I really like your lineup this week, maybe, is what is drawing me that way. I mean, I think West was a great pickup for you. I think you might have spent a little bit too much on him, but...
Yeah, I don't even know. I can't see who else bid on him, so I don't know how much I was going to spend. I edited the bid. Like, I changed it. I was high 40s at one time. I was mid-20s. Oh. I was trying to pick an... I wasn't sure how crazy people would be for him. Tim Hightower went for 25 or more that Jordan picked him up. He was the other big running back to go after. I wasn't sure how much I wanted to spend on him, but I knew I wanted him because Kansas City, with no Alex Smith, is either going to, they're going to rely heavily on the run. And with Spencer Ware having a concussion that he hasn't cleared himself out of yet, I thought West was for sure the guy that is going to get a lot of carries. And Kelsey being on Scott's side is going to be the guy who's going to get a lot of the receptions. I think tight ends are always great safety valves for for quarterbacks, especially guys who are coming in an injury situation. I'm not too hot about Jeremy Maclin. I know he got his first touchdown since week one last week. It was his best score since week one last week, only topping 11, which isn't great. So my trade for him hasn't gone exactly as I thought it would. He's getting a load of targets, and he's playing a lot of snaps for Kansas City. He's just not getting the ball because he goes deep, and Kansas City doesn't throw deep. So I'm hoping maybe Maclin can offset something from Ertz, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that works out with the Kansas City running game.
Well, I will say this. I think there's a lot of people who would be more than happy to have Maclin as their flex. because, I mean, he's – no, he hasn't put up numbers this year, but he's a great, great player, and he can go off any week. I know that we say that a lot about a lot – I know that we say that a lot about a lot of people. Geez, that's a mouthful. But I think that you're
– Oh!
I think that you're starting – 10 this week are more solid than Scott. My one, I wrote that your biggest X factor will be West, just how much they use him. Obviously, it's always risky putting in a guy who hasn't had a big game the entire year, and you're just putting him in because he's now the starter. But, I mean, he's had great games in the past. I know last year he had a span of games where he was putting up a good amount of points, so he clearly can perform. I think your three receivers are really solid this week. I think Julio is going to have a great game, especially after how bad of a performance he had last week. And believe me, every time Julio has a good or a bad game, I know it because he's a big part of my other fantasy team, as we have talked about a few times.
Holy
and shit. He has been quite frustrating this year, but at the same time, he has vaulted me into like the top score like three times as well. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm thinking he's probably going to have a good game. He hasn't had two bad games in a row this whole year. Michael Thomas, I told you in the original pod, he was one of the guys that I felt like you snagged for me in that draft.
Right.
And he's been putting up consistent starting numbers. And San Francisco's not the greatest defense. And I'm assuming Drew Brees is going to throw a lot of balls.
Oh, yeah.
I like Devontae Adams, especially with the receiving. Well, I mean, first of all, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be slinging the ball a lot, which is going to help my team, but we'll get to that later. But I know Cobb is still kind of on the fence about playing. I'm not sure if he's – I think he's expected to play, but I really like him in that lineup against Indiana. Dallas against Cleveland.
Indianapolis. Indianapolis.
Excuse me. The reason I might have said that is because I was watching Lakers Indiana yesterday, and so I've had Indiana on the mind. And yes, I have
only you, Tim.
Lakers because the Lakers are watchable this year, and by the way, they're about to beat the Hawks, which is a good win on the road. Anyway, shout out to my Lakers. But anyway, I think that I'm taking a bold prediction here, and I'm saying Rick by 22 this week.
Good Lord, man. I would just like everyone to know when I yelled, oh, that was Jason Kipnis scoring from second base on a scud that John Lester threw. So when you listen to this pod, think of that moment when you hear that. I'm really worried about Scott using Matt Ryan against me, you asshole. The Tampa Bay Bucks, they've got a really good run defense, and so Matt Ryan's going to pass the ball a lot. Julio, they took the questionable mark away from him, so he is going to be healthy. He's going to play. The Bucks got just destroyed last week, 513 yards from Derek Carr. 300 of that went to receivers. So the Bucks defense against wide receivers last week, 59 points given up. The 24th ranked passing defense. Ryan, if it's to Julio, if it's to Hooper, if it's to Sanu, he's going to be throwing the ball a lot. Even to the running backs, it's going to be throwing a ball a lot. And I've got to hope that a lot of those yards go to Julio. Otherwise, Matt Ryan throwing the ball a ton, and he has a huge week like he did last week where he put up 24 to Julio's 4. That's not going to help me out too good. I am expecting him to have a bigger week. He had 66 yards and a touchdown week one against Tampa Bay, so I'm really liking that. Dallas, now looking at Dookie Johnson, just kind of not a good situation for Scott as a second running back. He's really been riding Lamar and DeMarco, and once the bye weeks are done, he's going to have a lot better week. But against San Diego for DeMarco, I think it's going to be a good matchup. The run defense, the pass defense is really hurting.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I really wouldn't feel confident with Duke Johnson in there. Dallas is, they're surging right now too. I mean, they're feeling confident. They're playing well. Cleveland is, I think they're still winless.
Yeah. They're the only 0-8 team or winless team, I should say.
So I would even say that Duke Johnson's projection of 9.5 is – I would take the under on that if I had to bet on this week. That's just me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And looking at Scott's receivers, again, I really like my receivers. I agree with what you said. If I was looking at this objectively, my matchups are a lot better than Scott's. Allen Robinson has been a disappointment. Willie Snead is a third offense, a third option in that offense, even though it's against the Niners and he could get some points in there. If they run away with it early, it's going to be the Hightower and Ingram show in San Francisco. And Kenny Britt, he had the one good week, and that was it. I am worried about the two tight ends. Kelsey, again, like I said, could have a huge week. Greg Olsen could have a huge week, as Newton's been throwing more to other guys on the team. Olsen, a lot of them, rather than Kelvin Benjamin, which kind of saved me just a little bit last week, seeing as Benjamin wasn't scoring a ton for Newton. But again, Jonathan Stewart being back and healthy helps that team out a lot, too, with the run game, just adding some balance to the team. I agree with you that I'm going to win. I don't know if it's going to be by a lot because I think Scott's team has that ability to just kind of blow up, and this will probably be the week Kenny Britt scores like 30 points or something like that. I'm taking myself by 7. I like my matchups this week, and I guess it's not easy to see why, but I think I've got Scott beat here.
I agree, and this would be a very big win for you, Rick, because it's getting down to crunch time, and every win means more going forward, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't want to drop below 500 again. I've battled up to get to 500, so I don't want to go back down to that place.
Right, and this would be a big win against what's been the top team all year long until now, until this week.
Yeah, that or Jared, who I've already played and lost to. So
exactly.
Next up, we've got Pip, that is McNairbud, against Saved by Lev Bell, that is Luke. Pip has been making some moves, as did Sean Payton, who benched Ingram after an early fumble, and that really hurt Pip's team. Alan Hearns was the king of garbage time scores, and the interesting play of Jamison Crowder on the bench instead of just Janice, which kind of worked out with the Janice touchdown because Ty Montgomery was sick. Into the end, it was two guys with negative points on his team. Wasn't enough to beat Jared, who had a lot of points from Amari Cooper and the Broncos defense. Luke was shocked by Scott. As I mentioned, T.Y. Hilton left the game early against the Chiefs, was limited to only 2 points, and the Titans defense might have had the worst effect of the Jags garbage time scoring, as it went from maybe like an 8 or 9-point night to only 2. The biggest defense was Matt Ryan's 24 points, as everything else was kind of just washed out. Looking to this week, Luke is hammered with buys, while Pip basically has a full squad other than New England Clam Crowder. The lineups are all but set, but what do you like about this matchup?
Well, let's see. First, Pip is one of the 2-6 teams, and so I dubbed a theme for this week's games. I know Pip's got his random trivia that he pulls out of his ass, so I come up with something here. I said that I was walking, and this is actually a true story. I was walking outside to my car to head to work, and it was the first time that I noticed that the leaves are truly falling off of the trees. And I said to myself, well, winter is coming. And with the winter and the dead being that if you lose this week, you're pretty much eliminated from the playoffs. And that's not technically true, but if you're 2-6 and you lose, you officially cannot have a winning record. And me and Jordan were talking a few weeks ago, and we were saying that we feel like this is the most competitive year that we've had probably in a while, in terms of how almost like we're past halfway through the year and every single team still has a chance to make the playoffs. So, I mean, and how better to fight the cold and the winter than with the fires of Daenerys Targaryen. So that's why I'm feeling good going forward. So anyway, Pip catches a major, major break this week. I think if he had any week to pick to play Luke, it would be this week. Because, like you said, he's got 5 guys on bye weeks. And these are guys, he might have had all 5 of these guys in his starting lineup if he could.
Oh, absolutely.
He's got A.J. Green, which is a huge hit. Edelman is a big hit as well. Not nearly as big as Green, but Bernard, who he started every game this year.
Yep.
I would assume he would play Carson Palmer against anybody as opposed to Stafford against Minnesota. And James White is kind of, as you would say, a warsh, as if you would have him in his lineup or not. So I think this is setting things up for Pitt to make the comeback that he needs to make, you know. Because a lot of people think Luke has the best team. I think he's certainly in the top three right now. And it's because of a lot of those guys that are on the bench. In terms of their starting lineups, let's see. I like Luke's running backs. Booker, obviously filling in for Anderson, has the ability to be a big-time producer of points. Williams, I'm not super sold on him. I know that he's only playing him because of the bye weeks he has, but certainly not a guy you want as your second receiver. I like Sanders. Smith at his flex is tough.
Yes.
He's only had four carries. That's the most carries he's had in a single game this year. And he's still going to be clearly second string to Devontae Freeman. And in case I'm missing something, Freeman is fully healthy and ready to play. Am I right?
Antoine Smith is on Tampa Bay, so he wouldn't be going up behind Freeman, but he would be the starter because Jaquizz Rodgers is hurt and Doug Martin is still out. So it's not a bad play, but I think compared to what he's got to work with, his other option would be D'Angelo Williams if something happened to Lev Bell. So it's not a terrible play, but it was a pretty solid pickup from Luke.
I don't know what it is about the Buccaneers and the Falcons that I always get mixed up. I do that every single time. Okay, yeah. So I guess I'll take that back a little bit because for some reason I was being retarded thinking he was behind Freeman.
But yeah, when you said Smith at flex, I thought you meant Pitt playing Torrey Smith at flex,
right.
Which is I don't agree with that. That's a strong reach for me.
Yeah, but the thing is Luke, whether you like Smith or not, he's the only option he has. He literally only has two other guys on his bench that are playing, and I wouldn't play either of them over Smith. So Luke has his best lineup that he can this week, but it's certainly not his best lineup. As far as Pip goes, let's see. I kind of question his flex move with Torrey Smith. Because he's got a lot of options on his bench, in my opinion. I would maybe consider Henry. Maybe I would follow, obviously, how Murray is doing throughout the week. And if he's fully healthy, then maybe not. But that's certainly an idea. Matthews for Tennessee has been surging up. And Asiata might be the starter if McKinnon can't play this week. I don't know. What do you think? How do you like that flex move? To me, it's a toss-up between all those guys.
Yeah, I would. I think it's good that he's got a guy in there right now who's playing an afternoon game, and you would figure out about Henry by about the time the early games get to halftime if Henry's going to be active or inactive. And then DeMarco Murray is inactive, then you can, you plug in Henry and you got a starting running back. Rashard
right.
Matthews hasn't topped four receptions in a game so far this year. He has scored in three of his last 4 weeks, and San Diego's pass defense hasn't been great. So maybe that would be a better play than Torrey Smith because you got to rely on Kaepernick. And Torrey Smith also has not topped more than three receptions on the year. I mean, he had one for 17 against Tampa Bay before the bye week. In his only big game of the year, three receptions for 76 yards against Buffalo in a game that was kind of a crapshoot because Buffalo ran away with it. So that I just the Niners outside of like Carlos Hyde really just kind of I would want to stay away from them. I don't even know if Hyde's going to play this week. So that could just be all sorts of bad for the Niners offense. He does have options to plug in there. And I think it would be something that he should look into to switching someone out. I don't know. I wouldn't go with Smith. I would go with someone else, and I think Pip might end up making that change, although he might stick with Smith. I don't know. I don't think he should, but I think Pip might end up sticking with Smith just because Asiata and Henry could just be backup guys, and Rishard Matthews could be, I mean, essentially a third option if Tennessee just goes run heavy against the Chargers.
Right. Yeah, I kind of, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking in terms of his flex position. In terms of the rest of his team, I like Ingram and Michael as his running backs. I'm not really sure what the whole Ingram being benched thing is all about. I know he got benched for fumbling the ball, and I don't know if he was hurt or if the team, if he just, I don't know. Like, why would you just pull a guy out of the game? Clearly something's going on. So that is certainly a red flag in my opinion. But Hearns and Marshall, I like those guys. They're not guys I would want as my number one and my number two, but they're doable. Montgomery's a big question mark. I know he's playing running back and receiver, so he's getting carries and he's getting catches. So that's certainly enticing. We'll see how he does against, you know, like I said, an Indianapolis defense that isn't the greatest. So my initial thought is, Pip, you've got to win this one. If you're going to ever, if you were to beat Luke, this is the week to do it. And I think it's going to be a really, really close one. My gut still tells me that Luke's going to pull it off, though.
Yeah, I think
that's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah, Brandon Marshall, I think he's been a disappointment so far this year. Pick Patrick has been going a lot to Quincy Enema. I mean, only the one touchdown for Brandon Marshall. Hasn't really averages like four, maybe five, 4.5 receptions for the season. I think if there's a week for him to turn it around, it's against Miami. Allen Hurds, again, great in garbage time. Hasn't been too good. Ty Montgomery is coming back from the, I think it was sickle cell.
Yeah, something weird like that.
Yeah, I mean, he had a great week against Chicago when he was out there running the ball and, you know, as a wide receiver. So that was pretty solid. But this week, they maybe have Ripkowski as a running back. I don't know. That situation is going to be interesting. In the end, for me, I think Luke has got just enough. I really like all of the running backs in this, assuming Ingram is the starter. Ingram and Michael with Le'Veon and Devontae Booker. Those are going to be four of the running backs. Probably the other ones that I really like are in Jared's matchup against Duncan. These four running backs and the four running backs in that matchup are I guess if I had eight guys to watch, it would be those. And I think the depth that Luke has right now at receiver – and at flex, he's just got better plays right now than Pip has to go with. I've got it as a close one, but I've got Luke by four.
Yeah, that's a good guess. One last thing to note, quarterback play could possibly be the game changer in this one because the running backs and receivers look like a big wash. Like you said, we both think it's going to be close. So, you know, if Stafford can have a big game, that could be all Luke needs to pull away.
And low-key, a really good kicking matchup with Vinatieri and Kyra Santos. Chiefs and Colts like to stall out in about field goal range. And so that can lead to a lot of, you know, 4-5 point kicks that can kind of change things. I know nobody likes talking about kickers, and nobody really does. But if there's a matchup to pay attention to how kickers change a game, I think that'll be the one.
Yeah, so this is going to be a very interesting matchup to watch. I'm certainly going to have my eyes on it.
All right. Finally, Tim, you get Hoke back, Mountain. You snapped your 5-game losing streak. We heard how great that felt to finally come into the win column. You stay out of the 2-6 marsh at the bottom of the pile of our standings. Still kind of in it, only a couple games back from a spot in the playoffs. You get Nick, your former roommate and couch hoarder, had a great, just a great garbage time week from Bortles. Crabtree in garbage time as well, but garbage/overtime. Basically doubled his yardage from the last that he got all through the entire game, from the last 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, and then overtime he doubled everything. The Gronk got his 69th touchdown of his career, and he will retire since he won't be able to get to 420 career scores. And Freeman, a big score week as well. He's the clear number one with Tevin Coleman out in Atlanta. So this week, the Medford boys go head-to-head. What do you like in your matchup, Tim?
Medford, yes. Yes, the couch hoarder, Nick Fronick. It's that time of the year where we you play your best friend in fantasy football. And for the past three or four years, we've been in the same living room watching the games against each other. It's the first time we won't be doing that. I really like the matchup. I think it's a great matchup this week. Nick is a team that hasn't been actually too different from mine. He's got two more wins than me. I know two of those wins that he had were by less than 2 points. So it's been very close matchups for Nick all year. His team is very solid. Every time I look at all the teams, the more and more I like his, if everyone stays healthy. This week, I like his running backs a lot. You mentioned Hyde possibly not playing. I actually wasn't aware of that. What's the latest on that exactly?
Well, he's got that shoulder injury that knocked him out a couple weeks ago before the bye. So he didn't play against Tampa Bay. So he had that week to heal, the bye last week, and now he gets New Orleans. It's a shoulder injury. He was limited in practice on Wednesday, had a non-contact jersey on. Again, shoulder injury for running back can be a little iffy considering, you know, how does he go down? Are they going to attack that side of the ball? He's going to get hit or tackled onto that shoulder. So it's just going to be interesting to see who's going to pick him up or who would back him up after that, because they had three guys split with about six carries at least each. For me, running backs in this matchup are really interesting, especially if McCoy doesn't play. Fronick could plug in Gillisley into his lineup for Hyde if Hyde doesn't play, but you don't have anybody going into Monday night when you would find out if McCoy could play or not to plug someone in there. I guess, well, you got CJ Procise, but I don't know how much action he would get. So for me, it's really interesting to see how this would all work out if Hyde can't go, because Fronick would already have Devontae Freeman locked up since he goes on Thursday night. Waiting until Monday with Gillisley. If Hyde doesn't play, it's all very interesting to see how these running back health issues will come into play.
Exactly. And like you said, I do have Procise. I did just add him off the waivers. Obviously, the waiver wire is so thin right now. But like you said, I have two guys that are questionable in my starting running backs, and Jaquiz, who's been so solid for me the past 2 weeks, is now out. And so I had to have some kind of last resort. And honestly, he's a lot better option than nobody, which is what I have to put in. So I'll take my chances with it. It's looking like McCoy is supposed to play, and it's looking like Riddick is also supposed to play. No Gronk this week, which bodes really well for me. I know he was writing that two tight end set, which you'll see I'm writing this week.
The two tight end train, choo-choo.
That's right. Benjamin and Crabtree, I like both of them, although Crabtree's playing against Denver this week, so you just don't know how that's going to go. I would still like to think that he's going to get the reception, so I still think that he's going to get points. Sterling Shepard, I ever since the first few weeks, he really hasn't been very good. Big game against Philly. It could be his breakout game, and I'm sure that's what Nick is banking on, is that he kind of reverts back to his, you know, early year self and has a big game against his Eagles. But I'm hoping it doesn't happen. Sproles, obviously always a good flex player if he's in the lineup, which he is. I still think Matthews is retaining that starting role, so I feel okay about Sproles being in there. But all around, I mean, Nick has a lot of guys that can score this week. In terms of my team, excuse me. Oh, I was going to say, I think another thing that helps me this week, aside from no Gronk and Hyde possibly being limited, is him starting Roethlisberger this week, because I have Antonio Brown.
Right.
And so, you know, and against Baltimore, I don't know if that's going to be the highest scoring game. I mean, that's a big time game in Baltimore. That seems to be always a low scoring affair. I feel like I've watched that matchup every year. And
well, they play twice a year, so you're
exactly,
bound to see it at least once.
And they always play at prime time. So I feel good about his quarterback. I don't know if Roethlisberger is really going to put up that many points, and the percentage of his points that are going to go to Antonio Brown, I feel good about my chances there. Really big having Moncrief back.
Yeah, that's huge.
He has a bye week next week, and his original diagnosis was anywhere up to 8 weeks. So I was, when things were looking down for me, it was certainly looking like there was a chance that they would possibly wait until the end after the bye week to throw him back in the lineup, which would only give me the chance to play him, I think, two more times before playoffs start, which would essentially be losing him for the whole year, in my opinion. But the fact that he's back last week and he helped me get a win, and he's back this week at a time where I don't have Alshon Jeffrey, I'm really glad I ended up keeping him, even though he was hurt. I got a lot of trade offers for him, and I really considered a lot of them. But I'm hoping I made the right choice. I feel good about Enema in my lineup. He hasn't been amazing or anything, but he's been consistent. I mean, he's given me points when a lot of other people haven't.
Yeah, and he's been a really good – I don't know when you picked him up, but he's had a really good season. He's getting a lot of receptions. I mean, even the bad week he had against Baltimore, two receptions, that was against me, 73 yards. One of them was for, I think, like a 65-yard touchdown. Like, that's huge to get a guy that can come in and just go have big play ability while also getting a lot of receptions. So that's Quincy Enema has been a great pickup for you.
Yeah, he's been probably my best transaction move that I've made. I think I picked him up week three, and I think I paid $7 for him, if I'm not mistaken. So that was a good one for me. And if I hadn't made that move, especially with, you know, I was really banking on Sharp being big this year, and I think he will be a good receiver, but he's just still going through a lot of those rookie mistakes and rookie struggles, so he's not really performing for me, which is okay. But yeah, he's Anunua. I don't even know how the hell you say that.
It's Anunua.
That's the one thing I don't like about him is always reading his name on my lineup kind of bugs me. But
just say Enema. It makes it a lot better.
All right, Enema it is. I still think he's going to get catches. There's a decent chance he'll score. Miami's not the best team. I don't know how I feel about riding two tight ends. I know you're pretty harsh on it a lot of the time, and I get it. I think, though, that Gates is my best flex option. What do you think about that?
I bash on the two tight end train when you've got two bad tight ends in there. I mean, when you've got, like, Scott's got Olsen and Kelsey, like, those are two top five tight ends that if you've got both of those guys on your team, you play both of them. But, I mean, Andrew was the guy who was stretching it with the two guys that he would play, and it's just that's the wrong tight end train to ride.
Right.
I mean, even Fronik with Zach Rudolph and the Gronk, when the Gronk is in there, those guys are two tight ends that you can feel pretty comfortable in playing if you have to play two tight ends, like you're hit with injuries or you're hit with byes or whatever. Like Rudolph is a good safety valve to put in there. So it's interesting. I don't mind Gates. I think he's been okay. Him and the Hunter Henry situation has been a little weird to try and figure out.
Yeah, I agree. I had Henry in my other league for a while, and then he sucked it up. And they keep going back and forth between who's number one, who's number two. I don't know what to do with it. Gates has been my hardest player to manage this year, I would have to say, like when to play him, when to sit him, and whether to just move him to somewhere else.
Yeah, and it sucks that Gary, he hasn't been getting red zone looks because the Browns haven't been scoring a lot. And when they have, they've been going to basically Terrell Pryor. And then occasionally they'll run the ball in or whatever. But the quarterback situation was bad to start the year, losing RG3, and then it's just been a shit show ever since. And he hasn't had that consistency that he had last season when he was getting the ball in the red zone or near the red zone and was scoring. It's not a terrible play. Dallas's defense is pretty tough, but I think Barnage can be somewhat reliable. As for your flex, not the biggest fan of Tyler Lockett. Tre'Davious Sharpe hasn't shown enough. Obviously, Jaquizz is out, and Procise is a backup. So I think Gates is your best play there. I do think overall it's going to be slightly It's going to be a tough matchup for you, I think, looking at everything.
I definitely think it's a tough matchup. I'm certainly trying to be as optimistic as possible. One thing, I think that I have a big edge in quarterback, and I'm banking on that following through.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I'm banking on getting, you know, half of Roethlisberger's points on my team with Brown. And if Rodgers can have a big week against Indianapolis, which he's projected to get, that could be really big for me. So,
yeah, I think you've got the clear advantage in quarterback. I also like your receivers all a lot more than Fronik. Benjamin, Crabtree, and Shepard both facing really tough defenses. And Shepard has only put up, in the last 4 weeks, he's put up about 17 points, while in week three alone, he put up nearly 16. So he's taken a huge just knockdown, Eli going to Odell a lot more, or the run game a little bit more here and there, has really kind of shifted things in Shepard's value. All of that said, I do think you've got the better receivers and QB, Fronik with the better tight ends and running backs. I think it's going to be a tight one, and I'm going with you by 5.
Wow, I really appreciate the vote of confidence. I actually did not expect you to pick me, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I think the wide receivers are going to be the difference. I think all of those guys could have really big days that end up being the difference compared to his receivers, which could all three of them put up duds, really.
Yeah, you know, I honestly believe that being non-biased, I think this is a really cool good matchup, one to definitely watch, one that's still relevant. Couple last-minute quick thoughts about this. I looked at me and Nick's scores had we played in any of the previous weeks, and we played 8 weeks. 4 of those 8 weeks, we would have had a matchup that was decided by less than 5 points.
Wow.
Last week, I scored 129.8. He scored 129.4.
Good God.
I would have beat him by less than half a point. Week 3, he scored 2 more points than me. Week 5, he scored 2.1 points more than me. Week 6, 4.7 points more than me. So there's a good chance this is going to be a close, close matchup. Also, very interesting thing, my fantasy team has followed the Oregon football team. Whatever the Oregon football team does, my team does. Won the first 2 games, I won the first 2 games. Lost 5 straight, I lost 5 straight, and then the Ducks came up with a big win, and I came up with a big win. So,
well, if it comes down to that, then I'm for sure picking Fronik to win, because I think USC is going to roll over the Ducks this weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you would have let, dang it, you definitely stole the punchline there. I was going to say, so, if you have faith in Oregon, I don't understand it, because I think USC is probably going to beat us. So, if that follows suit, Fronik, you're in for a treat this week. But I'm feeling good about my chances. I'm feeling good about – I'm only one win. I'm only – I think that the person in 6th place right now is 4-4.
Right, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. And I'm 3-5. So, as Pip said last pod, I'm not giving up. If I lose this week, I'm still not giving up until I have that 7th loss, and then it's kind of over. But like you said, the consolation actually means something this year, right? Isn't there some kind of a money-back situation if you win the consolation?
Well, the point of the constellation bracket is whoever finishes last in the regular season and then the last place finisher of the constellation bracket, they split the shipping price of the trophy to the winner.
I see. Okay. So that's so, basically you just don't want to be last.
Yeah. The goal is to not finish last in the regular season or in the constellation bracket. That way both have meaning. So if you'd miss the playoffs, you don't just give up unless you want to pay for shipping for a very awkward sized thing that I think was like $35 to ship. And I had to pay half. I had to split half of that with Scott. So that wasn't fun to deal with.
Wow, I don't know how I missed that. I knew there was some kind of an incentive in the constellation bracket. But yeah, I definitely don't want to be last. I don't want to be paying any shipping to somebody that beat me in fantasy football.
Yeah, so. Especially when we've already got our buy-in, you'd be doubling up and you're splitting, and then you finished last twice and you're tripling up on your shipping costs. It just doesn't go well.
And you just feel like crap because you were the worst team out of 12 guys.
You were the worst team twice, too. Like, you had a chance to redeem yourself, and then you finished last again.
Wow, okay. Well, pressure's certainly on to not get last, so I'm looking at the bottom 4 and 5 right now. So
all right.
We'll have to see what happens. Well, I appreciate you having me on, Rick. It's been great. Would love to get into the studio at least one more time before the end of the year, but I appreciate the call. It's always good to be on the pod. Really liked the pod last week. I already texted Pip and told him that I appreciate the work he puts in. I know you do this every single week. I know it takes a lot of work. I've done this kind of – I've done similar things in college and having to put productions together and think of original things to say. It's not always easy. So I appreciate the time you put in. And as always, can't wait to see how things go this week.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to stop it there. That was pretty much the best thing anybody's ever said to me about the podcast. So that's going to be the end of it. That's how we're going to finish things up. I'm not even going to post the second half that we have with Jared. You know, give a shit about what he has to say anyway. So that's going to do it. That's the podcast, everybody. Good night. We now welcome back Jared, CEO and GM of A Rivers Runs Through It, the team in first place through 8 weeks of the season. Back on the pod. How's it going, Jared?
Going well, Rick. How are you?
Doing good. So last time you were here, it was week 4. You were one of 2 undefeated teams left. You ended up losing that game. You went from 3-0 to 3-1. You're now on your longest winning streak of the season at 4. Are you worried at all that, you know, you might curse things being back on the pod again?
No, not too worried about that. Last time I was on the pod, I actually called that I was going to lose to Luke that week. And this week, it's going to be a little bit different. So if anything, I should just be on the pod every week and just say I'm going to win. And I'll just keep winning the rest of these games.
Interesting. All right, let's jump right into these matchups. Then starting off with Andrew, he's, as of right now, Gurley, You Can't Be Serious, versus Brandon, who is Silence of the Michael Sam. Andrew put up a decent fight against Austin, scoring 90 line, and lost, even though Matt Forte scored over 20. So my theory of him scoring over 20 and winning is out the window. Didn't help. He had a 0 from Michael Floyd in the starting lineup as well. But basically, bench points were limited for Andrew. Brandon, who likes basketball more than football, put up a league low at 85 for the week, had a hard time dealing with injuries and buys. But when your team high score is 15 and your QB can't even get over that much, it's pretty hard to beat and win doing that. This week, the two teams are at the bottom of the standings, are battling things out. Andrew needs to set his lineup. He's dealing with 5 buys, including all 3 of his receivers. J.H.I.E. is looking for another 200-yard week, but the waivers are looking to be tough. Pickens looking for 2 wide receivers and a running back this week as well. Brandon's got 4 guys on bye, lost Tevin Coleman and Jamal Charles, and might lose out on Spencer Ware with a concussion as he hasn't passed NFL protocol, missed practice on Wednesday. And sticking with Pick Patrick at QB, Odell Beckham is back from London. Matchup looking pretty decent as of right now. So what positives can you find in this matchup?
Starting off, I just want to say that it's crazy the amount of, is he out? Sorry, I'm so preoccupied with this game. For the matchups in general this week, there's so many buys. And when I was just going through my 3 matchups that were assigned to me, it was crazy the amount of people that hadn't set their lineups yet. I don't know whether that's like strategic or people just haven't set their matchups yet. I would hope that people try to set up their matchups before Wednesday night so we can do this pod. But from what I've seen, at least in my matchups, that's not the case. Definitely not a positive. But if you look at Brandon's injuries list, it's fucking incredible. He's got 6 players that are questionable. Jamal Charles just got put on IR, which would be okay because he has Spencer Ware, but the problem is Spencer Ware is also questionable.
Yep.
And he has Tevin Coleman at his flex who just got ruled out.
Yep.
So at least out of the 3 teams that are the 6 teams I looked at, he by far has the worst injury situation. His buys are tough as well. Larry Fitz, Blunt, and Martellus Bennett all on bye, and their power rankings respectively are 8, 7, and 3. All of them average over 10 points. So that's, you could at least have 45 points there missing if they all go above. 2 of them are averaging at least 15, almost 15 points. Let's see here. What else did I write down for them? What happened to Jamal? Did he go down earlier, like in the game prior, or was there something else happening during the week, like at practice, that they put him back on IR?
Well, it was going into the season, he was recovering from an injury, and then he never got healthy. I mean, he's had 13 carries on the season. 12 carries, if I could, you know, if I'm good at math. 12 carries on the season for, I mean, basically nothing. And he just couldn't come back from it, and he wasn't getting healthy. And eventually they're like, look, this injury that you had hasn't healed. You need to have another surgery on it. We're putting you back on IR. We've got Ware and Sharkhandrick who are coming up, and now Ware's got a concussion. So that's not looking good at all. But it's just he never got healthy again.
This is perfect example of, I'm not a big fan of handicapping a running back with a backup, but if Brandon didn't pick up Spencer Ware, he'd be so unbelievably screwed right now. So this is a caution to everyone next year. If you have a running back with any sort of problems when it comes to injury, you have to get the handcuff.
Well, yeah, it saved me with drafting Rawls in the third round and then picking up Kristen Michael, who ended up being the starter until I traded both Rawls and Michael away. So, yeah, handcuffs are really important.
Yeah, but what's slightly different about that situation is that between Kristen and Rawls, there was – obviously Rawls had the starting job at the end of last year, but before he got injured. But there was still no, like, real true clear cut. I mean, we're comparing this over to, like, the Jamal Charles and Spencer Ware story, where Charles is by far the clear cut number one, right?
He's
one of the most explosive. I think he has – the NFL record for yards per carry, which is over his career, which is ridiculous. So yours, obviously, if you're going to take a leap of faith on Rawls, you definitely have to pick Kristen. But when you think about Jamal Charles coming back from injury, or even when he was healthy, I thought you were calling me back again, that the Cubs just fucking scored. Are you kidding me? Anyway, when it comes to Jamal Charles, I would never think about picking up. Obviously, they have – at the time, they had three really good running backs with Spencer Ware, Miles Davis, which we'll get to in a little bit when we talk about my team, and Jamal Charles. But, I don't know, like I said, crazy scenario where you learn to handcuff yourself, you know? You gotta pick up that backup.
Or
moving
even
on,
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, if you're not going to handcuff yourself, pick up someone's handcuff if you got space on your bench. I mean, if you're willing to hold on to a guy because you think someone might get hurt, then pick them up and just hold on to somebody, because if that does happen, then you look smart for holding on to a guy. And if it doesn't happen, then you're holding on to a backup that you can drop, or he becomes trade bait, just wanting to give someone a handcuff, or someone who wants that handcuff can pick him up.
Hence the Charleston and Doug Martin situation before Charleston got hurt this year.
Right.
Also with Brandon's team, how long has he had Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback?
At least 2 weeks.
Okay, what the hell is he doing? He needs, obviously, if you look at Ryan Fitzpatrick, over the past 2 weeks, last week he put up 14.4, which is, like, I guess, decent. I don't know, I'm coming from Russell Wilson, who's been pretty shitty the past 3 weeks, so I guess I can't really talk. But prior to that, the past 2 weeks previous to that, he was 8.7 to 5.2, let alone the one game he had versus Kansas City where he put up negative 2.3. How is he not either A, trying to trade me for Dak Prescott, or B, just pick, like, literally anyone else off of waivers? There's no way that every single starting quarterback in the NFL is off of our waivers right now. Or is that not the case? I haven't looked at a quarterback on waivers in a long time.
Quarterbacks on waivers are not good, especially since waivers has gone through. I think Alex Smith, probably before his concussion, was a decent pickup. Guys who did get picked up were Manning and Kaepernick. But Brandon went Carson Palmer, Joe Flacco for 2 weeks, Carson Palmer week 7, and then Palmer week 6, Kaepernick week 7, and then Fitzpatrick week 8, and he's going with them again. I have looked at Brandon's team because I have James Winston, and I'm openly trying to trade him. Because I have Jameis, I was like, I'm trying to give him a quarterback, but I'm trying to think of who I want from his team. And it's really it's not great. Like the guys that I would want are guys that he wouldn't give up, like LeGarrette Blount or Martellus Bennett, maybe if Gronk went down again, but he probably won't. Brandon doesn't have a lot of pieces that I really want, that I feel like I could give up Jameis for them. And that's been hurting. And I don't think anybody's been willing to trade him a quarterback. A guy like Duncan, who's got Luck and Mariota, two solid quarterbacks, can kind of could trade one of them away as well. It's just having those other pieces to go along with it.
Yeah, he really backed himself into a corner with that. So I don't know what the thought process was there, but he's got to figure out something besides Fitz Magic. And then also, Robert Aguayo at kicker. He's the power ranked 32, which is last because it's 32 teams in the NFL. And each one only has one kicker. How in the hell is he not just dropped him and picked up? Like, I picked up Matt Bryant, I want to say, like, 3 weeks ago, and he's, I think, power ranked in the top five. Like, how is he not decided to move? Like, a kicker, he's only averaging 4.4 points. Like, a good kicker can at least give you an average of more than double that. So I don't understand what he's thinking. There's like, easy things that he could do to make his team, like, you know, serviceable, but he's just not doing it.
I mean, Josh Lambeau is the fourth best kicker right now, points wise, and he's sitting on waivers as well. So right. I mean, it's
Brandon, if you're listening to us, for love of God, make some moves here.
Again, like I said, he cares about basketball more than football. So let's look at Andrew's team. It is tough to look at because he's got four guys with byes. All three of his wide receivers have byes, which is that's really hard to do to make the trades and moves that he did to end up with. Three guys who have byes on the same week and to not notice it also doesn't help. Andrew hasn't had the best season, so maybe his care level has dropped a little bit. He's got two guys on his bench that he can plug in essentially to fill holes, so he only has to pick up really one receiver and then a flex option as well if he wants to go with Buck 50 Bilal with the Forte duo. Maybe Hunter Henry and roll in with the two tight end train, choo-choo. Obviously has to plug in Jay Ajayi as well on his bench. So there's some moves that Andrew needs to do here, setting up his lineup to avoid moving to 2-7.
Absolutely. I don't understand how he made moves for wide receivers without looking at their bye weeks. He's in a real pickle right now. Like you said, he's got two options to plug in. He's got Tavon Austin from L.A. and then Adam Humphries from Tampa Bay. Those are two horrible ideas to put in your starting lineup. But he's got three solid running backs. Two super solid tight ends. He needs to unload at least one of those running backs, or maybe one of the tight ends. He needs to figure out his wide receiver situation. I wish he would have tried to figure out his lineup before the pod, but looking at it now, like I said, he's got Jay Ajayi on his bench.
Ajayi,
the hot hand, right? Ajayi, he's got to beat him in the starting lineup. Even if you move Kroll to flex, he's got so many options at flex, but the problem is he's got nothing going at wide receiver.
Yeah,
I don't know what he's thinking. Like I said, it's tough. I don't understand.
I mean, you at the very least have to plug in Ajayi for Crowell. It absolutely sucks that Andrew wasn't able to plug in Ajayi for his 33-20. I mean, he back-to-back 200-yard weeks, and he's sitting on a bench.
He didn't play him.
Bench points just going through the roof for Andrew, as they have been. But, again, maybe the bad start that he had kind of has gone into his care level, not really caring. It's just tough looking at both of these teams really right now with the byes and the injuries. I mean, with Tevin Coleman out, if Spencer Ware doesn't play, that's two more guys out of Brandon's lineup, and he can't plug anyone in. He has no backup running backs right now that are healthy. So if Spencer Ware doesn't play, he has to pull him out of his lineup. Tevin Coleman won't play, and he's got to pull him out before the Thursday night game starts. Otherwise, his flex is locked, and he's fucked there. He doesn't have a backup running back. I mean, he's got LeGarrette Blount, but he's on a bye. Like, and he's got Alfred Blue, who for some reason he thought, let me spend $15 on him last week. He's got a bye as well. But you know, good thing he picked up Tony Romo to hold on to him a couple weeks ago. But,
I don't understand why he's bashing Tony Romo. Like, I have Dak Prescott, and more, it's all pointing towards they're just going to keep the train rolling. I don't understand.
Yeah, it's... These teams are just not looking too great right now. I'm going with Brandon, just going off the fact that he's got a full lineup that he can work with. I mean, Andrew's got five spots, three-ish spots that he needs to fill up because he can plug in Hunter Henry at flex. He can plug in Jay Ajayi. He needs to find a wide receiver, just one wide receiver to plug into his lineup to have a full roster. Well, Brandon's got to find a running back to fill in his hole. I'm going with Brandon just off the fact that he's got Odell Beckham, Terrell Pryor, who have been solid additions to the lineup, and he's got the 90% full roster.
I 100% agree with you, besides the fact of all the roster spots that he's filling on Andrew's side compared to Brandon and just the ease of that. Also, when it comes to overall opponent ranking matchups, we've got Brandon with 9 in the green, 4 in the red, compared to Andrew with 5 in the green and 7 in the red. I've got Brandon winning this one fairly easily. I've only got him up here by 10 points. I also have every single one of my projection scores super low this week because of all the crazy buys. I've got Brandon walking away with this one 105-95.
All right, due up, it's the Battle of the Oregon City boys. Mike Jordan, Mike Wallace, and Gromit versus Austin Bendit like Beckham Jr. Some information on Jordan here. He is the most scored against team in the league. He had to deal with Duncan putting up a league-high 142. Mr. Jordan, I'm going to go undefeated and win the league, falls to a three-way tie for last. And my fun fact of the week is that last week, team scored 100 or more or less than 100. Jordan was the only team that scored more than 100 and lost. So you must be thinking that's some really bad luck. He is the most scored against team, 1,038 points. I'm the second with 982. But Jordan is only the sixth highest scorer, averaging 114 a week, giving up an average of 129. So he has been scored on a bunch, but it's not like he's the second highest scoring team and he's constantly losing to the team that's scoring the most points in the league. He's just not really putting up points. Austin had some big weeks from as well against Andrew, a huge week from Tom Brady. Stephon Diggs came back from his bye with a bang, and a big week from Jordan Reed in London, 99 yards and a big TD for Washington. But this week, neither team in this matchup has taken the bait on my Jameis trade, going with Kaepernick and Eli Manning for JoJo and Austin, respectively. Jordan bought his way into Tim Hightower, who might just be running a backup for the week, leaving Jordan without a solid RB2 play for the third time this season, and down to $5 on the waiver wire budget as well. RIP in peace, Mike Wallace and Gromit. As for Austin, no defense, no kicker, and no backup running back in place of Jeremy Hill. Austin is literally the exact same spot I was in last week. Not a fun spot to be in. So the Battle of the City of Oregon City is on the line. The winner take all, since Jordan likely won't be in the playoffs to take one from Austin. What do you think of this matchup here?
I think Austin, we're not really talking about it, but he's on a three-game win streak. Like, he's quietly tied for third right now, only 2 games back behind me. And looking at his roster, like, it's a solid roster. Besides, he's got Jesse James at tight end. That's obviously not ideal right now. And obviously looking at his starting lineup doesn't mean too much right now because he's got – obviously he hasn't addressed it this week yet. But in general, if he can get Deion Lewis back at some point, I have no idea what his prognosis is for the rest of the year. And same with Doug Martin. He's going to have a pretty formidable team coming into the playoffs if he can just continue to hang around. All you got to do – you know, nobody ever knows what's going to happen in the playoffs when it comes to fantasy. All you got to do is get in. So I kind of like Austin's team. I'm not saying I'm like him this week, but overall I like his team. It's tough that he has Jeremy Hill and Chris Thompson both on bye, so I'm not quite sure what he's going to do at their running back position. You've got Ryan Matthews sitting there, but he's questionable. He's got to figure out his kicking situation. He's got to figure out his defense. And since he didn't make any moves before the waiver wire was processed, there's probably slim pickings for those defenses, and you have people like Luke going and just picking up the best available matchups of the week. Going over to Jordan's team, David Johnson's on bye. So, like, the one shining spot on this team is on bye this week. You already talked about he's starting Tim Hightower and Terrence West at running back. You already addressed that he literally has nothing going there. When I saw that he was starting Colin Kaepernick, I really cringed. And so I looked at his stats, and in the 2 games that he started, he put up 18 and 14 points. So I guess it could be worse. He could be starting Fitzpatrick. I don't know. Understand. What kind of trades did you send them for Jameis?
I've sent a couple offers. I sent a text to Jordan saying, would you want Jameis? Do you want to work anything out? And he flat out did not respond to me, even though he sent me a couple snaps. So I know he's looked at his phone. I talked to Austin a little bit. He said that he doesn't want to give up too much because it would only be a 1 week plug-in while he's looking to basically just have Brady in there. It would be injury backup stuff. The same reason I'm holding on to him with Cam in there taking a lot of hits. I've sent offers, haven't gotten anything back. Also talking things through with Luke. He's been the only one that we've had a back and forth, and we kind of know what's going on with each other. But I'm saying to everyone, I'm trying to trade Jameis. If you're looking for a quarterback, I'm just looking for something decent in return, as usual. So I just, you know, not getting too much right now, which is a little frustrating.
Yeah, that is frustrating. Pretty similar situation. I feel like Luke is the only person that sends me trades. He's been trying to get either Amari or Mike Evans off of me fairly consistently. He's been trying to unload T.Y. on me.
I got the worst trade. I have to bring this up from Luke today. Hold on. I got to keep talking for a second, but I got to find something here.
Yeah, I'll keep going. When we look at Jordan versus Austin's power ranking matchups, overall, both bench and starting roster, Jordan has nine in the red. I mean, nine in the green, two in the red, obviously super favorable compared to 6-4, six in the green, four in the red for Austin, which is good. But the fact that he hasn't really set his lineup yet leads me to believe I'm not quite sure what to expect from the team. As of stands right now, Jarch is a 28-point favorite, though Jarch is only projected at 107 in our league. Obviously, that usually doesn't get it done when the average is 115, whatever Pitt said last week. So, in my opinion, I think Jordan gets on the board this week and he snaps his two-game losing streak, gets a win here, gets to 3-6, and then Austin will lose, snap his three-game winning streak. But the only reason Austin has a much better team, the only reason why he's going to lose this week is because of this terrible bye, having Brady out, having Jordan Reed out, who's still messing around with his concussion issue, having his defense out, having his kicker out, Jeremy Hill and Chris Thompson. That's pretty tough. So who do you got, Rick, in this game?
Let's go real quick back to this trade. It was Luke offered me out of nowhere Julio Jones and Jameis Winston for Matt Stafford, T.Y., James White, and Julian Edelman, and I just responded lol to the trade. I laughed out loud when I saw
Julio and who?
Julio and Jameis. Yeah, by his home run. Julio and Jameis for Stafford, T.Y., James White, and Julian Edelman, so I'd basically only be able to play two guys this week, and I'm sure as shit not giving up Julio. Looking at Austin's team, the buys that he's got are terrible, but it's also bad because the guys that have been injured that he's been holding on to, he's going to have to drop. He's going to have to get rid of a Doug Martin, a Deion Lewis, a Corey Coleman to pick up a running back, a defense, and a kicker. Like, he has to drop people that he's been holding on to, or even a guy like Chris Thompson who could easily become the starter after the bye week because Matt Jones has had fumble issues and he's also been hurt. I mean, that could easily become a starting running back that he could plug in and play. He's put himself into a situation where he's got a lot of depth, but like I said a lot earlier, when the buys hit, they were going to hit hard, and it's really, really hitting him this week. The thing I do like in this matchup are the wide receivers. Thomas Jones and Bryant going up against Cooks, Diggs, and Landry. Marvin Jones is the only guy who's got a bad matchup against the Vikings secondary. I think these wide receivers are always really fun to watch. It's going to be really fun to see how many points they rack up on this defense. All this said, Austin, with the moves that he's going to have to make to fill out his lineup, he's going to need 30-point weeks from everybody in his lineup right now to overcome the three guys he's not got in his lineup to beat Jordan. All that said, Jordan's had some rough stretches here, but I'm going to take Jordan getting the win by 9.
Well, by 9. I've got it by 15. 100 to 85, Jordan.
Yeah, I don't know. I picked 9 just because I just hit that number. Finally, Jared, your matchup. You've won 4 in a row. As you said, you're not worried about the curse of the pod striking you down. What did you think of your win last week against Pip?
You know, honestly, like, I was fairly confident going into it, but by about 4:00 Pacific time, I was sweating pretty hard. Then going into going into the Sunday night game, I want to say. Okay. Obviously, Mark Ingram putting up a negative 1.5, kill Pip.
Yep.
Drew Brees put up 20, which you can expect. His defense put up -2 versus Dallas. I don't. that killed him. The Monday night game killed him. The Sunday night game killed him. But before that, before the two primetime games, I was honestly pretty scared. But obviously, I'm pretty happy with Amari Cooper's performance with almost 30 points. Obviously, my defense killed it with 17. It should have put up more. I was even rooting. I'm going to take it back. I was never rooting for the Broncos. Matt Bryant put up 10. And Frank Gore is literally like the only workhorse I have left on my team. But we'll get into that in a second. So, I feel pretty good. The fact that it was shaky, but I still came out with a win. I'm feeling even more confident. That's four wins in a row. My only loss, I predicted to Luke. I'm predicting another win this week. So,
yeah, looking to this week, you're going up against another week high score in the league for Duncan, who had a big week from Zeke, Melvin Gordon, Jordy Nelson, Tyler Eifert, and even Mo the Canoe Sanu. Looking to this week, are you worried facing another high-scoring team in the league that Duncan has been? He's been really boom or bust, and what do you think of the matchup?
Yeah, he's been the definition of boom or bust in this league. He's very similar to Austin's team, where it's kind of sneaky good. He's under the radar. He's also 5-3, tied for third, only two games back. He'll definitely be in the playoff situation. When you look at the members on his team, a lot of them aren't in coasting playoff situations, so they're going to be playing hard all the way through the end, which is always good for fantasy. It's crazy to think that if you were to tell me, all right, your running backs are going to be Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon, you have to go with those two the whole season, you would say, hell no. Like, no, I got better options. I'll figure something else out. But those are your number three and four best running backs in the league right now. So
absolutely wild how Melvin Gordon has become a touchdown machine. Just wild.
He went from none in the NFL last year to where is he leading, or he's at least top three, right, with touchdowns this year?
He's got eight rushing, and then he's got two receiving touchdowns.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Just like one said, fumble, too.
You would have told me that Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon were the two – he has the best running back combo in the league by far. And once again, this week, Ezekiel Elliott playing Cleveland is projected almost 20, and then Melvin Gordon against Tennessee is projected 15. I'm pretty scared of Duncan's team. And when we get to my final projection, I still think I'm going to pull it off. Just in general, he doesn't even have a starting tight end in his Eifert's on bye, and I'm only projected 3 points higher. So once he puts a starting tight end in, he'll probably have the favorite in projection. This is probably the best matchup out of all the games this week, I'd say.
Yeah, it's for sure going to be a tight one. Now, Duncan is still sticking with Marcus Mariota, his team's namesake, over Andrew Luck, playing a pretty weak secondary with Green Bay. You're sticking with Dak Prescott against the Browns. I'm just wondering, are you confident in staying with Dak against the Browns just in general? And how do you feel about Mariota going up against your Chargers, another pretty bad pass defense?
So this is the first week besides my bye week with Russell that I'm going to go with Dak. So I wouldn't say I'm sticking to him. And the main reason why, trust me, I know Jarch and Duncan are really big Seahawks fans. I don't mind the Seahawks at all. But Russell hasn't thrown a touchdown in 3 weeks. He's been so unbelievably disappointing. And even though I've won four straight, don't get me wrong, I'm very, very happy about that. But it's still so unbelievably stressful when one of the mainstays in your lineup, the quarterback, isn't putting up the points he should. And then I keep watching Dak. Obviously, I'm afraid of the whole situation where Dak's finally going to get pulled for Romo. All it's going to take is one bad loss, and that shit's going to happen. But as of right now, I keep watching Dak, and every single week he goes off on my bench. And I saw the matchup this week. I was like, Seattle's playing Buffalo. Buffalo is like a middle of the road defense. I still Rex Ryan every once in a while. He seems like his defenses every once in a while have huge gains. And I'm not counting. I was counting on last week that Russell would go off against New Orleans, and he still didn't. So I'm thinking Dak, who played incredible against a solid Philadelphia defense last week. He's playing Cleveland Browns. I don't like starting a rookie quarterback. But I don't know, this kid's different, as everyone has seen so far this season. So I'm pretty okay with it. When it comes to Marcus, both are starting middle inside linebackers for the Chargers. Jatavius Brown and Denzel Perryman are going to be out this week. We still don't have Verrett. There's going to be no containment over the middle or on the outside. If the defensive line, whatever sub-package that we run with a 4-3, overcommit with Bosa, and Melvin Ingram on the side, and they collapse in on the corners, and Marcus can spring free. He's gonna run 15 yards every time he can. So I'm pretty scared. He's projected 15. I would say that's probably the floor for him. I would say he gets no less than 15. Would not be surprised if he goes for over 20, which is really scary. Obviously, I have Dak. He has Ezekiel. The question is, do they throw or they run? They're pretty committed to the run. I find that pretty scary, too. I'm kind of hoping that the Titans just jump out to a big lead and it kind of eliminates Melvin Gordon out of the situation for the play calling in San Diego, which will help me a lot. Like I said, I really do like Duncan's team, but I don't know. I think Dak and Marcus is a very, very even, with their matchups, a very even setup. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know who's going to score more points, but I just know that Dak's going to put up more points than Russell, and I'll put my name on that.
All right. Yeah, looking at the running backs, I think this is probably the second best dueling pair of running backs that we have outside of Pip and Luke going with the four that they're going with. Gurley and Gore against Zeke and Gordon. I think that's going to be just four guys to watch. Maybe L.A., after the bye week, commit more to the run game instead of the pass. Gurley has put up more than 10 points four straight weeks, hasn't scored in his last two games. So that's a little bit interesting to see how he's going to do there. They haven't really committed to the run yet. Hasn't topped 85 yards or hasn't gotten more than 85 yards. That's his season high. So that's going to be interesting. And Gore's a workhorse who just keeps getting the ball. He keeps getting – now he's getting receptions and receiving touchdowns, which is really interesting. So I think that'll be fun to take a look at. Pretty balanced through wide receivers. Jordy Nelson, I think, going to have another big week, seeing as Green Bay can't really run the ball. Doug Baldwin, a toss-up against Buffalo. Again, Russell Wilson hasn't been throwing touchdowns, so obviously Baldwin hasn't been catching touchdowns, which, of course, probably this week will be the week Wilson throws about six touchdowns and they all go to Baldwin and you get blown out on Monday night. So that'll just happen. And Melvin Gordon will rush for like three touchdowns from the 1 yard line. And your heart will get broken, but you'll also be feeling great. But also because it's against Marcus, you'll be feeling like shit. You're going to have the worst Sunday of the week this year. I guarantee it. This will be the worst one ever.
Yeah. Definitely not ideal.
Yeah. And even Kanu Sanu, I think he could have a big week against Tampa Bay. You've seen when teams shut down Julio, Sanu is a great secondary option to go to. And it's going to be interesting to see if Tampa Bay decides to shut down Julio. They try and balance things out. Strong run defense for Tampa Bay, not so much in the pass game. So Ryan could just be spreading the ball around in general. So what is your final prediction then?
Also, I want to say Duncan's team is the complete opposite of Brandon's team when it comes to injuries. Duncan currently has no injury problems whatsoever. There's literally no one on his roster that has a Q or anything next to his name. And also, I got screwed with CJ going down. I had to make a ton of moves.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, it was. I ended up picking up like some trash-ass pickups like Bobby Rainey. Like, I'm honestly just grabbing at straws. Niles Davis got cut after like 2 weeks with Green Bay. I don't know what the fuck happened there. I really
you dropped 20 shrew bucks on him, didn't you?
I honestly thought I was saving my money, and I honestly thought that this was going to be the pickup to have. That he was going to, because I thought he was good in Kansas City, and I thought he'd go to Green Bay and light it up there because he finally get his opportunity. And then they let him go. Then I heard he went to the Jets or somebody, and they only had him for like 30 minutes, and then dropped him for CJ Spiller. So he can't even. He can't even hold a position, so I had to drop him. I wasted, like I said, like you said, 25 or 20 fucking $24 on him.
Yeah, I got you. You are pretty set up solid at $62 for your budget. Andrew, who's been holding down the one spot on the waiver wire, $87 to spend. So he's got money to spend on the waivers that won't really be going through. Jordan is done for the year at $5. I dropped big money on Sharkhandrick West, and I went from $70 to $39. So, people have been budgeting their money well for the most part. Cough, cough, Jordan. But it's still, with a couple weeks to go here, people are still set up. They've got money to spend. So it's been an interesting year for the free agent budget.
Absolutely. I kind of like this, honestly. I like this setup a lot more than the previous. So, like, who's going to hop on and get the waiver wire claim first? I definitely like this. I think we should be seeing this moving forward. But moving on to who I think is going to win when it comes to, oh, they're going to send them home. Fuck. All right, Cubs are up 5-1. Besides that, I've got four in the green, six in the red. He's got five in the green, four in the red. So very even when it comes to opponent ranking matchups. Like I said, he still doesn't have the starting tight end in, so the projections are semi-skewed. I'm still going to go not out on a limb. I still think my team is better. When you just look at my overall power rankings and my overall average points per game, I think I have a much more solid team. But obviously, like we said before, Duncan is the definition of boomer bust. I think this is going to be the best game of the week, but it's going to be a squeaker, and I'm going to pull it out. 5 wins in a row, go 8-1. I've got me winning 125-120.
I'm going to go to the other side here. I'm going to take Duncan. I think his running backs are going to play well again. I mean, they're top five in the league for a reason. They're going to stick with them. Nelson has a huge week against Indy. I'm going to take Duncan by no more than four. I think it's really tight, and I think this comes down to, Monday night with the Seahawks. Obviously, the last two guys, Baldwin, Hauschka, and the Seahawks defense. On Monday night, it's going to be really interesting to see how that one plays out. You got to hope for the Bills dominating on the road at Seattle, which teams just really don't do. All right. Well, thanks, Jared, for being on the podcast. Appreciate you taking some time away from Cubs Indians to do this. And best of luck in your matchup this week.
Thanks, man. Anytime when I'm in the coming future weeks, I'd be definitely down to do it again and go way more in depth. But as we know, I'm kind of preoccupied. I'm sure everyone in the world is watching, well, not in the world, at least the United States is watching this game right now. So I'm going to get back to it. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to the Semi Products podcast. I hope we have provided some helpful information regarding your own fantasy matchup this week. If we haven't, don't worry. You can listen to Fantasy Football Today live at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on CBS Sports Radio in Eugene on 95.3 The Score. The guys on the show will have all the information you'll need to make the best decisions for your lineup with all the latest active and inactives across the league. You can also tweet the guys using the handle at CBS Sports Fantasy using the hashtag FFT. Thanks again for listening. This has been the Semi Products Podcast.